Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former all-pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Audio.
It's overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. Youngest in Charge Movement, Linnell Willingham, taking you up to 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time before we hand things over to the Infinity Sports Network. Number to call the show is always 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Plenty to get to, including maybe an update on the Orioles and the Yankees at some point. 14 runs for Baltimore, 7 innings through. I know New York down Juan Soto, a lot of stress in their region. We will touch on local baseball before we get out of here. Nats falling to the Arizona Diamondbacks earlier today by a score of 5-2. Rough outing for our pal Mackenzie Gore. We'll discuss all of that and more before we get out of here. You can tweet at me all show long. It's at N-E-L-L underscore B-T-P. But I want to start with something non-local. If you all know, or if you're paying attention over time, and I'm in the chair at least, for the past month plus, one of our big discussion points here has been what is going to happen with the Los Angeles Lakers head coaching job. And we found out during the other show that I was a part of today, over on the Team 980, we found out at about 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern time that J.J. Redick was going to be hired to be the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski, the first on the scene with that news. And look, it is a 4-year deal for J.J. Redick, 15-year NBA veteran, one of the most respected players in the game in terms of his ability to parlay his playing career into being a media pundit. I thought he was great on television for ESPN during their studio shows. Thought he was a little bit too nerdy as a color analyst and didn't provide the entertainment, so to speak, that I was looking for. But all in all, congratulations to him. But I don't know if we actually should be congratulating J.J. Redick for taking the Los Angeles Lakers coaching job. Because let's just be real about it. J.J. Redick is now the most popular puppet on the West Coast. Thank you for moving that, Chris, so our communication's a lot better. Metal Chris, of course, behind the glass with us tonight here on Overtime. And I was, full disclosure, I was a little bit of a tizzy about, you know, something non-work related. And then I see Chris walk into the studio. My mood instantly changes. But now that we're leading off talking basketball, I know you have thoughts on J.J.
Redick. I'm just so pretty,
Redick.
That's all.
You're a handsome fellow. But you shook your head immediately when I said, I don't know if J.J. Redick should be happy about getting this Lakers job. I, for one, and I feel like we're jumping all over the place here, Monty Williams, another NBA head coach that was fired by the Detroit Pistons about 48 hours ago, I thought when Monty Williams was given and shown the door in Detroit that J.J. Redick would be a very strong candidate to have that job. We now know today his name is not in that ring, and he is going to be the next head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. I've said it once. I'll continue to say it about what the L.A. Lakers are as an NBA franchise in 2024. The Lakers, for years now, have been run like a mom-and-pop shop. And the last 3 or 4 head coaches that have been fired by the L.A. Lakers have been nothing more than a scapegoat. The problem with the Los Angeles Lakers does not exist on the bench. Or at least that part of the bench, rather. Their roster that they have put together, the front office of Rob Pelinka, Jeannie Buss, Curt and Linda Rambis, the front office of the Los Angeles Lakers are 110% responsible for the shortcomings of LA. Point blank, period. And let's just be real about this. Before LeBron James brought his talents to Los Angeles, they were in the gutter. They were in the absolute gutter of the NBA. The Los Angeles Lakers and the way that they have been run, it's similar to a third world country. Not investing the proper resources in all aspects of your organization, from analytics to advanced metrics on health and things of that nature, and then down to their drafting and their personnel decisions. So point blank, the only issue that NBA folks should have with this J.J. Redick hire is the fact that he does not have much of a coaching background. Other than that, what else would you expect for the Los Angeles Lakers? This is who they've been. The move makes no sense. I pray for J.J. Redick's sake that it works out for him. But what is going to be different about J.J. Redick on the bench leading the Lakers than Darvin Ham on the bench leading the Lakers? Now, I will say this about Darvin Ham in this postseason in particular. Just this postseason. If they were better coached, talking about the Lakers, they were better coached, they would have made or maybe won one more, two more games, or won a game in that series against Denver. They were competitive with the Nuggets. On paper, though, their roster does not stack up to what Denver has. Leading back to my original point with all of this, the Los Angeles Lakers, whoever's the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers, the number one concern and the number one priority that they should have is having some sort of say over the basketball operations. Because the roster that LA has constructed is not set up for long-term success. And J.J. Redick signed a standard four-year contract. J.J. Redick is a great basketball mind. But as I continue to say here, it is high risk, high reward. The Lakers are gambling on a high potential candidate that has zero coaching experience. The number one reason why the Lakers, I think, had interest in J.J. Redick is because the Lakers, 110%, right, have been invested in LeBron James. LeBron James came and saved this franchise a couple of seasons ago. Was it 2019 was LeBron's first year in L.A.? He came and saved this franchise in 2019. The long-term outlook of the Los Angeles Lakers before LeBron James was putrid and god-awful. They lacked talent. As we sit here on June 20th, week out from the draft, the Lakers still lack talent. The difference is you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, who are a package deal. LeBron woke up one day and decided, you know what, I want to live in L.A., and that's why the Lakers have had their franchise's fortunes turned around. It is a pure stroke of luck. It is a pure stroke of luck.
Well, didn't he say, though, growing up, he was a fan of the Dallas Cowboys, the New York Yankees,
yes,
and the L.A. Lakers? So he's one of those.
Yes. But all in all, they did nothing to deserve LeBron James. And the moves that they have made in their front office post-LeBron James, or while having LeBron James, I might say, lends you to believe that life post-LeBron is going to stink. Point blank, period. And I understand the tough decision that it is in L.A. to decide to hit the reset button and decide to rebuild, but that is where the Lakers should be heading at this point in time. But when you hire J.J. Redick, I would have to assume that LeBron James is going to opt in his player option. Now, Rich Paul, and who knows what to believe from the agent, Rich Paul came out, and I believe this was on a teleconference with Jonathan Givony, the lead draft analyst for ESPN. Rich Paul came out and said, and I don't know whether to believe him or not, but came out and said, look, the Lakers hiring J.J. Redick does not ensure that LeBron will opt in, and the Lakers' coaching decision has no fingerprints of LeBron James over it. Now, Rich Paul, I love you. I think you are what you and Clutch have done. You're the best sports agency in the league right now. He's full of manure with what he said. And I have this argument all the time with folks. For whatever reason, and I guess it's because LeBron is such a great superstar and doesn't have much holes in his armor in terms of off-the-court stuff, people make it like it is criminal behavior that LeBron James, the best player on the Los Angeles Lakers, had some sort of influence in the hire. You don't think Giannis Antetokounmpo had influence in Adrian Griffin getting the Bucks job? You don't think Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, or Bradley Beal didn't have any influence in Frank Vogel getting the Phoenix Suns job? That is what happens in professional sports. The best players in the organization either get briefed or, take it a step further, have influence on what happens from a player personnel standpoint and a coaching standpoint. That is what happens throughout the NBA. And I get so annoyed because everyone has made it their business to say, well, the only reason that J.J. Redick has the job is because of LeBron James. And? Who's the most important figure in the Los Angeles Lakers franchise right now? LeBron James. So, despite what Rich Paul said, I'd be stunned if LeBron didn't have any influence in the decision. My comment and question is, does it matter that LeBron had influence in this decision? Who cares? That's what happens in every organization. Charles Lee was hired as the new head coach of the Charlotte Hornets. You don't think Brandon Miller and LaMelo Ball knew anything about which direction the organization was going? That's the frustrating part with it. All in all, though, J.J. Redick, I think, maybe opening the door to other non-experienced coaches getting head coaching jobs or non-experienced people getting coaching jobs. J.J. Redick, to my immediate knowledge, and I don't know, we would have to fact check the Steve Nash thing before he became the head coach in Brooklyn. I don't think we've ever seen a guy hired as a head coach with such little experience. No high school experience, no college experience, no NBA experience. He's never been in the front office. He is an NBA analyst turned coach. And to be honest with you, that's all the Lakers could get, in my opinion. To this point, if you had to rank all of the head coach openings in the NBA, where would you rank the Lakers opening? Yes, they have LeBron James. Yes, they have Anthony Davis.
So Jason Kidd, I just looked up, had like no experience either.
When he got the Nets job.
Yeah, he went straight from playing the Knicks to the next season coaching the Nets. There was like an offseason.
Okay. I'm not being facetious here when I ask the question. Like, I don't remember anything like this, though. But hold on, though. Didn't Jason Kidd, maybe he was a Lakers assistant after he was in Brooklyn? Didn't he start on the Lakers bench as an assistant?
No, I mean, according to Wikipedia, he played.
He was the Lakers assistant from 2019 to 2021.
Yeah, but it says he played.
He was in Milwaukee as a coach.
Because he came back or whatever. Yeah, yeah.
I now would have to look because I know he coached in Milwaukee. I know he coached in Dallas.
It's almost like the player coach thing, which they don't really do anymore. You know, like Pete Rose is kind of the last of those, but, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. All in all, I think we can agree, J.J. Redick was not qualified for this job. You know, point blank. J.J. Redick was not qualified for this job. Now, as Chris just pointed out to us. Neither was Jason Kidd back in the day. But I think on the behalf of Jason Kidd and Steve Nash, what made it more justifiable, Chris, and tell me if you agree, was the fact that they were former point guards.
Yeah,
who are looked at as the cerebral guy on the court, the extension of your coaching staff.
Well, your point guard doesn't understand your offensive plan, then problem. Your team's not going to work. So.
Correct. So I think that was what justifies those two hires. But at the end of the day, it's still not, you know, lengthy track record, good experience. I guess maybe my perspective is changing here in real time. Because there's different ways to look at the Lakers hire. I think, you know, because of their front office and the structure of their front office, I thought they needed someone to come in there that didn't have a lot of experience. Like, that's the kind of coach they would attract. But with Redick, the fresh perspective on all of this is that the Lakers are breaking the norm of hiring a former head coach or an up-and-coming assistant. This is the most out-of-the-box hire in recent memory in professional sports.
I mean, part of it, though, I think...
Am I hyperbolizing that when I say that, Chris? When you think of all the major...
Well, first, he wasn't their first choice, so that kind of tells you something there, too. But
yeah.
But I think it could just be they want a manager of egos, because in L.A., that's it. You got to do that as a head coach. You got to manage some egos. And who knows if they're trying to bring other, you know, large stars in or whatever. Maybe they want to bring someone in, make LeBron have to take the back seat a little bit to somebody else. And, you know, if you need someone that can manage egos, maybe he's really good at that. I don't know. Like
you would hope.
Phil Jackson had to get Kobe Bryant and Shaq to play together well enough that they could win championships, and he did. But that's managing egos, you know.
Yeah. It is going to be fascinating to see this happen. And as I was getting ready for the show, I was trying to think, like, where we had seen this. I guess... With Nash, Kidd, you could throw Derek Fisher into that mold as well. They were former point guards, so I guess that's what makes it more acceptable. Either way, they weren't qualified for the job. I don't think J.J. Redick's qualified for the job. It's good on Redick's behalf because this is a situation for him that if he fails here, no one will blame J.J. Redick for failing in Los Angeles. If he fails in Los Angeles, it won't be an indictment on who he is as a coach. And I think that's the best way to look at this if you are J.J. Redick.
I mean, he's almost an interim coach or something. You know,
that's the only way that I can look at it.
Yeah.
Here. Because you've got to look at this Lakers job in two different categories. It is managing the twilight period of LeBron James and Anthony Davis together. And then it's being at the forefront of player development and drafting and being a part of that front office. Because I continue to contend. The problem with the Lakers for years now, and you got to take some time to go back to pre-LeBron James in L.A. The problem with the Lakers here in recent memory is not who's sitting on the bench, who's the head coach. It's this front office that continues to make incompetent move after incompetent move after incompetent move, or simply not doing enough. Now, bottom line, as I will continue to say, no matter what happens with J.J. Redick in Los Angeles, if it goes bad, he won't be blamed. If it goes great, he's going to get all the credit for it. Kudos to J.J. I think he's a brilliant basketball mind. And I think we can all agree he's probably not qualified. But who cares? Unqualified people get jobs all the time. Point blank, period. Will it work out? For my money, probably not, but I still think at the end of the day, one of the most prominent franchises in all professional sports, the Los Angeles Lakers, are in a rut and are going to continue. Second most titles now behind Boston. They're in a rut, and they're going to continue to be in a rut. 1-800-636-1067 is the number on the MGM National Harbor Lister lines. You can tweet at me as well. It's at @NELL_BTP. We will take a quick timeout. When we come back, we will keep things on the NBA. Our pal Josh Robbins of The Athletic set to join us at 7:40 to talk all things Washington Wizards. When we come back, we will start to take a look at what's next for the Washington Wizards. The NBA draft coming up on Wednesday night. The Wizards, two picks in the first round, number 2 overall and number 26 overall. Which direction do I anticipate the Wizards going with both of those first round picks. We will discuss that next here on The Fan.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey.
Welcome back. It's overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Linnell Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock before we hand things over to the Infinity Sports Network. News that we started with at the top of the show, J.J. Redick hired as the new head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. He signs a four-year deal to be the new head man in Los Angeles. And his job is going to be to try and get the most out of the last couple of seasons of LeBron James in Los Angeles with the Lakers. I continue to reiterate, it's not a good job. It's not a job that J.J. Redick should have wanted as his first. But to look at this with the glass half full approach, it's rare that you get to have your first head coaching opportunity get to be with the greatest player of all time. So I think that it's a good situation for Redick if you're looking at it through those lens. But outside of that, I don't know what's next for the future of the Los Angeles Lakers. I do know this, their inability to draft and develop their own talent is going to ultimately be the undoing of the Los Angeles Lakers. I think you almost got to go all the way back to what? Well, they drafted Kyle Kuzma. I guess that's Mitch Kupchak that drafted Kyle Kuzma, who was a good pick at the end of the first round when he was drafted and has turned into obviously a fine player. But it's just hard, you know, to look at. It's just hard to look at LA and think that their front office has done a good enough job drafting and developing talent, which lends me to believe that that is the big issue with the organization, not the guy who's on the bench. But that's here nor there. The NBA draft is next week, and the Washington Wizards, our local basketball team here, has the number 2 overall pick and the number 26 overall pick. And I look at this draft as a draft that I can really judge them on. Last year, think about when Mike Winger, Will Dawkins, and Travis Schlenk were hired. I don't personally think they had a lot of time to I don't think they had enough time to really dive in and evaluate the guys the way they would have wanted to, yet they still come out with a damn good prospect in Bilal Coulibaly, who I'm super excited about the growth and development of. I'm also excited about what this number 2 overall pick could be, what the number 26 overall pick could be, because of the reasons I just listed. They will have worked on these prospects and fully understand what Washington's needs are for a full like calendar year plus now to this point. So they are well-versed in Wizards basketball and completely understand what they are looking for as a prospect. The big hubbub right now on Wizards Twitter is the fact that the Wizards are looking at Zachary Richichet out of France, and they're looking at Alex Sarr, also out of France. It is projected that Sarr is going to be the number 1 overall pick. Some folks are projecting Richichet to be the number 1 pick. Either way, me personally, I would not be angry, upset at all if they choose whoever Atlanta doesn't with the number 1 overall pick. Now, there could be a major surprise on draft night. There very well could be. Everything that you are hearing being reported on the Wizards is that they have been radio silent. That was a quote used by Jonathan Givony, ESPN's lead draft analyst. That was a quote used by him earlier today to describe what Washington is going to do with that number two overall pick. There is a thought that they would be interested in Sar and Rishi Shea based off of how much work they put in on those two during the season, sending scouts overseas to watch them during their season. So you assume that that's who they're going to go with. But because this is the first draft, really, for Mike Winger, Will Dawkins, and company, I would think that whoever they pick, especially that high up at number two, would give you a real idea of how they want to mold this franchise moving forward and what are the most important traits for a prospect moving forward. Because call it what it is, right? They're bad. This draft is bad. And ideally, right, you want to pick someone and pick the guy that you think has the most upside by your standards. I think that's either going to be Zachary Richichet, the 18-year-old Frenchman, or Alex Sarr, the, I believe it's 20-year-old Frenchman. There have been other names that have been floated around in contention for that number two overall pick. Stephon Castle out of UConn is someone that they've shown pre-draft interest in. Cody Williams out of the University of Colorado, the younger brother of Jalen Williams of the Thunder, who Will Dawkins helped draft. So I'm trying to draw the parallels with that. But I want to harp on Jonathan Givony talking about it being radio silent in D.C. in terms of what they're going to do with this pick. Good. Good. That is the one thing about this organization and the new people in the front office that I love is that it's been hard for folks to truly get a beat on what they were going to do. I remember sitting out at Cap One Arena last year on draft night when Washington decided to go with Bilal Coulibaly, and they even traded up to get Bilal Coulibaly one spot with the Indiana Pacers who had taken Jairus Walker, who ended up taking Jairus Walker. And when Bilal Coulibaly was announced, I was scratching my head. I didn't know what to think. But ultimately, I thought it would work out because I trust the powers that be now in the front office for the Wizards. And that's the mindset and mentality I think everyone should have when it comes to this pick. We're all armchair GMs, those of you on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it. In a draft where there is not a consensus number one pick, I think it is the best, most prudent move to go with the guy that has the most upside. That is where they should go. But for some reason, Wizards Twitter happens to feel like Zachary Richichet is not that guy if Alex Sarr goes number one. And I would love to know, if they don't go Zachary Richichet, in the event that Sarr goes one, if they don't go Zachary Richichet at two, which other direction would you feel comfortable with them going? Donovan Klingon out of UConn is a name that's been thrown around. I don't think he's a rim protector. He fills a need, but I just don't know if I would take him with the number two overall pick. I don't know how much upside he has. Stephon Castle, his teammate out of UConn, is someone who, you know, has been rumored to go in that range. But at the end of the day, I wonder, are the Wizards hell-bent on staying at two and picking? Is it a foregone conclusion that Washington is going to take a prospect with the number two overall pick? Because with it being radio silent and there not being a whole lot of insight into what Washington's thinking, it leads me to believe that anything is on the table still to this point, including a potential trade back from number two to move later down in the lottery to get a guy that they are in love with but also understand would be too rich of a selection with the number two overall pick. When you are in year two of a rebuild, don't forget to keep the main thing the main thing. It is about acquiring the most assets, resources moving forward possible, which is why, you know, the Kyle Kuzma trade conversation comes up, which is why potential Danny Avdija trade conversation comes up. So there are a lot of different ways the Wizards can go. I've never been more in the dark about a Wizards pick than this year. Seriously, even though it is being widely reported that they will take who is not selected between Risha Shea and Sarr, I don't know that to be true. Now, the one area of hesitation that I did have was the fact that, well, they hadn't brought in Zachary Risha Shea for a private workout yet to this point. They did bring him in, or they do plan on bringing him in here within the next coming couple of days. So we do know that there is interest. Because without that being a case, I was like, well, is there even interest in Zachary Risha Shea? Bottom line is this. I feel like whatever they decide to do, and I have no clue, just like we had conversation this draft process with the Commanders about trusting the evaluator and being at the mercy of the evaluator, I think it's a very similar situation with the Washington Wizards. Will Dawkins, Travis Schlenk, Mike Winger, all have a very polished track record as talent evaluators, to the point where in a draft that's considered largely to be a crapshoot, whichever direction they go, I'm going to be okay with it, unless it's Donovan Klingenitu. That's the only pick that I think would kind of turn me off and make me kind of question what they are doing. But even then, I still wouldn't question it because I genuinely do trust the guys that they have in this front office. Now, with the number 26 overall pick, I think it gets different. I think the conversation shifts a lot. And they honestly could end up taking a guy at 26 that they think could come in and contribute right now. I look at Ryan Dunn, local cat, out of the University of Virginia, who is probably the best on-ball defender in this draft. 6'6", 214. But the three-point shooting is an issue. Made just 12 threes in 65 games playing for Virginia and shot just 53% career on free throws. But he comes in and is able to give you an elite defender right away. And if you've watched Wizards basketball over the past couple of years, the Wizards haven't defended since Randy Whitman was the head coach. So I am all for drafting guys with defensive upside. Ryan Dunn out of Virginia is a guy that'll be in the mix. The other name, and I asked Chase Hughes about this last week when he joined us, and he shot this down, but I don't know whether or not they really have no interest at all. Terrence Shannon Jr. out of the University of Illinois, I think, was one of the best players in college basketball last season, just scoring bunches, can create his own shot, can create for others. But he had a sexual assault case that was lingering over his head. It was then found out last Thursday, that the woman, the accuser, was lying. That had been proven in court. He has been exonerated of all of these charges. And I now wonder how that impacts his draft status, because a guy like Terrence Shannon Jr. at 6'6", 220, from a pure talent perspective, I'd love to see him with the Wizards, right? I think he's a damn good player. But I wonder where this organization is right now in terms of off-the-court issues. How tolerable will they be? And I know he's been proven innocent, and for some squads, that'll be enough. But I know for some organizations, the fact that his name was even in this type of discussion will be an instant turnoff for them. The other issue, and this is what Chase pointed to when he joined us last week, he's a guy that was a fifth-year senior this year and doesn't have the most upside in terms of drafting guys by age. Now, I'm of the belief that I don't care if you're a fifth-year senior or not. You come into the NBA, you still have room to develop, point blank. So it'll be fascinating to see what they do. At the end of the day, though, depending on who they pick with the number two overall pick, they are going to Well, both of these picks, rather, the second overall pick and pick number 26, they have a unique ability to accelerate this rebuild if they were able to bring in guys that are going to be able to contribute right away. That's the way that I look at it. It sucks as a Wizards fan to be enduring a rebuild right now based off of what has happened with this group over the past 10 years. But be patient, because as I continue to say, this is the group, Mike Winger, Will Dawkins, Travis Schlenk, the Wizvengers, as I like to call them. This is the group that I think is going to be at the forefront of a turnaround for the Washington Wizards. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Coming up in about 18 minutes, our pal Josh Robbins, who covers the Wizards for The Athletic, is set to join us. We'll pick his brain on what he thinks the Wizards will do with their two first-round picks coming up in next Wednesday's NBA draft. Josh Robbins coming up at about 7:40. More overtime, though. Next on The Fan. 1-800-636-1067 is the number on the MGM National Harbor Listener Lines. You can tweet at me as well as at N-E-L-L underscore BTP. What should the Washington Wizards do with the number two overall pick coming up in next Wednesday's draft? I will have you covered out there live at Capital One Arena for the Wizards draft party and our coverage of the 2024 NBA draft. I personally continue to feel like there is some sort of major stunner coming on Wednesday night, whether it's with the first of their two draft picks or the second of their two draft picks. There is going to be some sort of massive earth-shattering move for the Wizards. Things have just been too quiet on their front in terms of which way they're leaning, who they have interest in. To this point, the Wizards pre-draft workouts that have been reported, none of those guys that have been reported outside of Sar and Rishi Shea are expected to go in the top 10. The interesting name that continues to intrigue me as, I guess, a potential contingency option if they choose to trade back is Cody Williams out of Colorado, the younger brother of Jalen Williams of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, I continue to bring that up because Will Dawkins was a part of the OKC front office that drafted Jalen Williams out of UC Santa Clara. So there is familiarity there. Other than that, I don't have much. In terms of which way they could be leaning and why they would be leaning that way. Alex Sarr versus Zachary Richesche has become the most polarizing debate topic on Twitter. As I said in the last segment, I'm going to be okay with whoever they select because I trust the front office. But from a basketball standpoint, when we're talking Sarr versus Richesche, I genuinely think Washington can't go wrong with either prospect. Now, I also want to say this. It is a, and I know a lot of you all out there know this, it is a 110% crapshoot in terms of them getting this pick right. All of the conversation you continue to hear surrounding this draft is that it's the most underwhelming draft in the last decade. And I just don't know. I continue to believe that, look, if you can evaluate talent, you're going to find talent. Point blank. It is up to the evaluator to determine whether or not a guy is going to pan out and or succeed. And I'm starting to feel like the failures in past drafts have been because there just wasn't good enough talent evaluators in place. Now, with the top two prospects expected to be overseas, guys, I wonder how much homework each of these organizations across the NBA have been able to do. Now, I know, based off of the track record of last year's draft and what OKC has done, that Washington and their lead talent evaluator, Will Dawkins, he is well-versed in the overseas talent. I know that to be 110% fact, look at Bilal Coulibaly. No one knew about Bilal Coulibaly until about 3-4 days before the draft. In Washington, according to Coulibaly, on draft night, was the only team to work him out privately. And although he didn't make one of the all-rookie teams because he had his season cut short due to injury, there's a lot of upside and a lot of meat on that bone, so to speak, in terms of what Bilal Coulibaly could ultimately be. So for that reason, I do trust what Will Dawkins and company are going to bring home. I just do. The bigger part of all of this is how they are developed. And it goes back to the head coach hiring of Brian Keefe, removing his interim tag and making him the long-term answer. That is what his number one trait is player development. So while it may feel doom and gloom right now, the process for the Wizards, their number one goal and objective should be to bring in as much young, moldable talent as possible, because for the first time in a long time, you have legit, well-respected, experienced folks in your front office and on your bench in terms of developing talent and having a proven track record of being able to develop talent. This isn't going to be a Jan Vesely situation. This isn't going to be a Johnny Davis situation, right? This isn't going to be a Kevin Serafin situation. Chris Singleton. This is good. This is something to be excited about in whichever direction they decide to go. I'm going to sound like a homer here. I'm going to sound like a mark for the team, but I just trust them. Whichever direction they decide to go with their draft picks in the first round, 2 and number 26, even if they choose to trade back from 2, some of you are going to be in a tizzy, and you'll have your underwear in a wad if they trade back from 2. I'm telling you, trust the process, because they've been at this for months now. They've known since about January that they were going to be a bottom feeder in the league and that they were going to have a legit shot at a top 5 pick in the draft. So they've been doing their homework. Whichever decision they ultimately come to at the end of the day, I don't want to see you all on Twitter. See, oh, why did they draft this guy? Oh, it's going to be another John Fishley. Oh, it's another Johnny Depp. Shut up! I'm so tired of the armchair GMs on Twitter acting as if they know what the hell they're talking about. It frustrates the hell out of me. Bottom line is this, though. Whatever decision is made 6 days from now on draft night, just buy in.
Would you say that we are at the mercy of the evaluator? Would you say that, Linnell?
I think it would be safe to say that at this point in time, we are at the mercy of the evaluator. Coming up next, we're going to be at the mercy of Wizards insider Josh Robbins and whatever analysis he wants to bring to the program. Always look forward to talking to him. Josh Robbins, senior writer for The Athletic, covers the Washington Wizards, set to join us next here on Overtime. Welcome back. It's Overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Linnell Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. We're getting ready to be joined right now on the BetQL guest hotline by our pal Josh Robbins, who covers the Washington Wizards and the NBA for The Athletic. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Joshua B. Robbins. Josh, what's going on, my man? How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Linnell.
Yeah, always fun having you on and talking hoops with you. You know how I get. I'm very passionate about our local basketball team, Josh. And you've covered this team for a little while now. I am so in the dark about what they are going to do with the number 2 overall pick. And I know what's been widely reported that they will choose between who Atlanta doesn't select, between Zachary Richey and Alex Saar. But in terms of what was reported by Jonathan Givony, I want to know if you can corroborate this. He described the Wizards draft talk and draft activity as radio silent coming out of the nation's capital, meaning that Will Dawkins, Travis Schlenk, Mike Winger, not really tipping their hand to their peers in terms of what their interest level is in certain prospects. Would you agree with that? And from a fan's perspective, should we be worried that they are radio silent to this point?
I guess you just push one of my buttons, Linnell. Inadvertently.
Okay.
You know, everyone takes these mock drafts and all this intel so seriously, it's ridiculous. Until someone writes or says, hey, this team is going to draft so-and-so, it's all
bologna
irrelevant.
Cheese.
Well, that's an interesting way to describe it.
Yeah.
It's all bologna and cheese.
Yeah.
Bologna and cheese. I don't know any front office worth a darn, that would telegraph what it wants to do, particularly if it's drafting second.
Right.
You know, or any team that's dependent on the team ahead of it, they're not going to, if they're the least bit competent, they're not going to say anything. And again, this is one other thing. What these aggregators, and you know who I'm referring to, these people who steal whatever they see in these mock drafts from someone like Jonathan Givony or Sam Vecenie at my place. So-and-so worked out in Washington. He worked out in Washington. Well, look, the Wizards have to get everybody they can possibly get into Washington for the draft. Not necessarily, yes, for this draft, that's true. But they have to do it for maybe years down the road when some of these people become available in possible trades.
Yes.
Or they become free agents. You get to know guys in a way that you can't get to know them after they join another team. So I guess you caught me at a bad time where I'm all grumpy.
I'm upset about it as well. Because look,
it's nothing to get upset over. It's nothing to get upset over. But
leave the upsetness to me, because I'm upset about it because. You know the narrative, and this is a big reason why I wanted to have you on tonight, because I know that you are a straight shooter and you are not afraid to call out bologna and cheese when bologna and cheese is the main course. There is this, and tell me if you've seen this or not. You know how I feel about Wizards Twitter. It is an absolute toxic cesspool of misinformation and armchair GMs that think they know more than they know. There is this consensus out there in Wizards Twitter, for what it's worth, that if it's Zachary Richichet, Josh, Wizards Twitter is going to be outside the Cap One Arena with pitchforks, blowtorches, ready to set the building ablaze. From what you've been able to gather during this pre-draft process, one, is there legit interest from Washington and Richichet? And then two, what type of prospect do you think he could end up being, and why is it, I guess, that he is widely viewed as a top two prospect in the draft?
I'm not sure that he is a top two prospect in the draft. I know that's what the mock drafts have said.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Jonathan Givony at ESPN, who has consistently rated him as the number one pick, the erstwhile number one pick in Atlanta. Actually, I think this is one area where I'm beginning to tend to agree with Wizards Twitter.
Really? Okay.
He's 6'8 and a half.
This is my confusion. Is he 6'8 and a half, or is he 6'10? Because that 6'10 is the number that's constantly thrown out by folks that are high on him for obvious reasons. Well, you want to make him seem taller.
I think 6'10 and 6'10 in sneakers.
Okay.
He's got one of the worst vertical jumps in the league, or in the draft. And this is not the NFL Combine, but to some degree, to a large degree, athleticism does matter.
Yes.
Right? And, he's 6'9". Let's agree to
6'9". Yes.
At 6'9". If you're 6'9", and you're not a good athlete, or you don't have any explosion, any explosiveness, I think that's an issue. I don't care how good your feel for the game is. And
yeah, look, I hear you. I hear you.
So they're not wrong, but I would also say Wizards Twitter, and by the way, you and I, me included, we've never watched the guy play.
Right.
We've seen some highlights.
Correct.
We've never seen him play. because he's in France. And how many French pro league games? I'm talking about basketball now, not soccer.
Right.
You know, I guarantee we don't watch any of them.
No.
So, no. But sometimes the testing doesn't lie. And
well, the vertical is. I didn't realize the vertical was this bad. It's 25-inch standing vertical. Josh.
Yeah, that's
bad. That's bad.
It's a worry. It would be a worry. Yes, unless he's the greatest knockdown shooter on earth, and he isn't. Well, he could be good.
At the beginning of the process, he was being advertised as the best catch and shoot guy in the draft in terms of numbers, percentages, and what he was able to do during the 21-game stretch in France at the end of the fall, where he shot 46% from three during 21 contests. I don't know how many attempts that was per game, but that led me to believe that, okay, he's a good shooter. In terms of, like, the other on-court stuff with him, you continue to hear about the ability to knock down shots. But what I think would be most intriguing to the Wizards would be the position versatility and the ability to guard essentially 1 through 4. Because if you're 6'10", he's shown the ability to guard guards overseas. I don't know if he would have the strength necessarily at this level to guard true fours. But what, in your mind, would be his best trait and why Washington would be interested from what you're hearing?
Well, he's a 6'9 wing. That's pretty tall.
The positional size, yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty good. You know, that's one of the reasons why Denny is a valuable wing. He is said to have a good feel for the game. And that's something that you can't teach. It's very tough to teach that. And he's said to have it.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough. I personally, as I said before we brought you on, Josh, I am going to applaud any decision that they make, because for the first time in a long time, I trust the talent of value. Did Josh drop? I think we lost Josh, Chris. Well, effort to get Josh Robbins back. But for the first time in a long time, I genuinely trust the talent evaluators that the Wizards have in their front office, talking about Mike Winger, Travis Schlenk, Will Dawkins. I genuinely trust those guys. So the idea of anyone poo-pooing Josh on the pick would annoy me. As I was saying before we lost you, whatever way they go, I'm going to applaud the move, and I feel like we're completely at the mercy of the evaluator right now. Wizards fans out there, I feel like, should trust whatever decision they decide to make, whether it's staying at 2 and picking whoever, whether it's trading back, whatever. Because for the first time in a long time, we have competent talent evaluators in the front office, and I'm just excited to see what they could do with a full calendar year of work. Because as some fans may forget, Josh, when they drafted Bilal Coulibaly, they had not been on the job very long.
True, but they've been scouting him for years in their prior jobs. And what I was saying was, one of the reasons why no one knows what Washington wants to do is because this draft class, there are no sure things in this draft class. So a lot of it is the product of this being the worst draft class at the very top in years. At least that's what the majority of industry insiders think. And it's not an easy job. And the Wizards have to trust their abilities. You know,
yeah.
They have to get it right. And this is the draft where it's going to be tougher than most drafts to get it right.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, it's exciting as a fan to think about the prospect of them adding someone else who could be a part of the long-term solution here. But with that number 2 overall pick, in terms of the future of it, does your gut tell you that they stick and pick Wednesday? Or would you be surprised or taken aback if they feel that any trade calls for Tua.
Well, if they could they're not going to be able to do this, but if they could somehow get a very lightly protected pick for next year, then you'd have to consider that. Or 2026, they'd have to consider that. But I don't think that's going to happen because those drafts are just expected to be so strong. And again, there's not this can't-miss guy at two.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for four episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
1-800-636-1067 is the number on the MGM National Harbor Lister line. You can tweet at me as well as at @NELL_BTP. What should the Washington Wizards do with the number two overall pick coming up in next Wednesday's draft? I will have you covered out there live at Cap One Arena for the Wizards draft party and our coverage of the 2024 NBA draft. I personally continue to feel like there's some sort of major stunner coming on Wednesday night, whether it's with the first of their two draft picks or the second of their two draft picks. There is going to be some sort of massive earth-shattering move for the Wizards. Things have just been too quiet on their front in terms of which way they're leaning, who they have interest in. To this point, the Wizards pre-draft workouts that have been reported, none of those guys that have been reported outside of Sar and Rishi Shea are expected to go in the top 10. The interesting name that continues to intrigue me as, I guess, a potential contingency option if they choose to trade back is Cody Williams out of Colorado, the younger brother of Jalen Williams of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Now, I continue to bring that up because Will Dawkins was a part of the OKC front office that drafted Jalen Williams out of UC Santa Clara. So there is familiarity there. Other than that, I don't have much. In terms of which way they could be leaning and why they would be leaning that way. Alex Sarr versus Zachary Richesche has become the most polarizing debate topic on Twitter. As I said in the last segment, I'm going to be okay with whoever they select because I trust the front office. But from a basketball standpoint, when we're talking Sarr versus Richesche, I genuinely think Washington can't go wrong with either prospect. Now, I also want to say this. It is and I know a lot of you all out there know this, it is a 110% crapshoot in terms of them getting this pick right. All of the conversation you continue to hear surrounding this draft is that it's the most underwhelming draft in the last decade. And I just don't know. I continue to believe that, look, if you can evaluate talent, you're going to find talent. Point blank. It is up to the evaluator to determine whether or not a guy is going to pan out and or succeed. And I'm starting to feel like the failures in past drafts have been because there just wasn't good enough talent evaluators in place. Now, with the top two prospects expected to be overseas guys, I wonder how much homework each of these organizations across the NBA have been able to do. Now, I know, based off of the track record of last year's draft and what OKC has done, that Washington and their lead talent evaluator, Will Dawkins, he is well-versed in the overseas talent. I know that to be 110% fact, look at Bilal Coulibaly. No one knew about Bilal Coulibaly until about 3-4 days before the draft. In Washington, according to Coulibaly, on draft night, was the only team to work him out privately. And although he didn't make one of the all-rookie teams because he had his season cut short due to injury, there's a lot of upside and a lot of meat on that bone, so to speak, in terms of what Bilal Coulibaly could ultimately be. So for that reason, I do trust what Will Dawkins and company are going to bring home. I just do. The bigger part of all of this is how they are developed. And it goes back to the head coach hiring of Brian Keefe, removing his interim tag and making him the long-term answer. That is what his number one trait is player development. So while it may feel doom and gloom right now, the process for the Wizards, their number one goal and objective should be to bring in as much young, moldable talent as possible, because for the first time in a long time, you have legit, well-respected, experienced folks in your front office and on your bench in terms of developing talent and having a proven track record of being able to develop talent. This isn't going to be a Jan Vestley situation. This isn't going to be a Johnny Davis situation, right? This isn't going to be a Kevin Serafin situation. Chris Singleton. This is good. This is something to be excited about in whichever direction they decide to go. I'm going to sound like a homer here. I'm going to sound like a mark for the team, but I just trust them. Whichever direction they decide to go with their draft picks in the first round, 2 and number 26, even if they choose to trade back from 2, some of you are going to be in a tizzy, and you'll have your underwear in a wad if they trade back from 2. I'm telling you, trust the process, because they've been at this for months now. They've known since about January that they were going to be a bottom feeder in the league and that they were going to have a legit shot at a top 5 pick in the draft. So they've been doing their homework. Whichever decision they ultimately come to at the end of the day, I don't want to see you all on Twitter. See, oh, why did they draft this guy? Oh, it's going to be another John Fishley. Oh, it's another Johnny Depp. Shut up! I'm so tired of the armchair GMs on Twitter acting as if they know what the hell they're talking about. It frustrates the hell out of me. Bottom line is this, though. Whatever decision is made 6 days from now on draft night, just buy in.
Would you say that we are at the mercy of the evaluator? Would you say that, Linnell?
I think it would be safe to say that at this point in time, we are at the mercy of the evaluator. Coming up next, we're going to be at the mercy of Wizards insider Josh Robbins and whatever analysis he wants to bring to the program. Always look forward to talking to him. Josh Robbins, senior writer for The Athletic, covers the Washington Wizards, set to join us next here on Overtime. Welcome back. It's Overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Linnell Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. We're getting ready to be joined right now on the BetQL guest hotline by our pal Josh Robbins, who covers the Washington Wizards and the NBA for The Athletic. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Joshua B. Robbins. Josh, what's going on, my man? How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Linnell.
Yeah, always fun having you on and talking hoops with you. You know how I get. I'm very passionate about our local basketball team, Josh. And you've covered this team for a little while now. I am so in the dark about what they are going to do with the number 2 overall pick, and I know what's been widely reported that they will choose between who Atlanta doesn't select, between Zachary Richey and Alex Saar. But in terms of what was reported by Jonathan Givony, I want to know if you can corroborate this. He described the Wizards' draft talk and draft activity as radio silent coming out of the nation's capital, meaning that Will Dawkins, Travis Schlenk, Mike Winger not really tipping their hand to their peers in terms of what their interest level is in certain prospects. Would you agree with that? And from a fan's perspective, should we be worried that they are radio silent to this point?
I guess you just push one of my buttons, Linnell. Inadvertently.
Okay.
You know, everyone takes these mock drafts and all this intel so seriously, it's ridiculous. Until someone writes or says, hey, this team is going to draft so-and-so, it's all
baloney
irrelevant.
And cheese.
Well, that's an interesting way to describe it.
Yeah.
It's all baloney and cheese.
Yeah.
Baloney and cheese. I don't know any front office worth a darn that would telegraph what it wants to do, particularly if it's drafting second.
Right.
You know, or any team that's dependent on the team ahead of it, they're not going to, if they're the least bit competent, they're not going to say anything. And again, this is one other thing. What these aggregators, and you know who I'm referring to, these people who steal whatever they see in these mock drafts from someone like Jonathan Givony or Sam Vecenie at my place. So-and-so worked out in Washington. He worked out in Washington. Well, look, the Wizards have to get everybody they can possibly get into Washington for the draft. Not necessarily, yes, for this draft, that's true. But they have to do it for maybe years down the road when some of these people become available in possible trades.
Yes.
Or they become free agents. You get to know guys in a way that you can't get to know them after they join another team. So I guess you caught me at a bad time where I'm all grumpy.
But I'm upset about it as well. Because look,
it's nothing to get upset over. It's nothing to get upset over. But
well, leave the upsetness to me because I'm upset about it because. You know the narrative, and this is a big reason why I wanted to have you on tonight, because I know that you are a straight shooter, and you are not afraid to call out bologna and cheese when bologna and cheese is the main course. There is this, and tell me if you've seen this or not. You know how I feel about Wizards Twitter. It is an absolute toxic cesspool of misinformation and armchair GMs that think they know more than they know. There is this consensus out there in Wizards Twitter, for what it's worth, that if it's Zachary Richichet, Josh, Wizards Twitter is going to be outside the Cap One Arena with pitchforks, blowtorches, ready to set the building ablaze. From what you've been able to gather during this pre-draft process, one, is there legit interest from Washington and Richichet? And then two, what type of prospect do you think he could end up being, and why is it, I guess, that he is widely viewed as a top two prospect in the draft?
I'm not sure that he is a top two prospect in the draft. I know that's what the mock drafts have said.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Jonathan Givony at ESPN, who has consistently rated him as the number one pick, the erstwhile number one pick in Atlanta. Actually, I think this is one area where I'm beginning to tend to agree with Wizards Twitter.
Really? Okay.
Which he's 6'8.5".
This is my confusion. Is he 6'8.5" or is he 6'10"? Because that 6'10" is the number that's constantly thrown out by folks that are high on him for obvious reasons. Well, you want to make him seem taller.
I think 6'10" and 6'10" in sneakers.
Okay.
He's got one of the worst vertical jumps in the league or in the draft. And this is not the NFL combine, but to some degree, to a large degree, athleticism does matter.
Yes.
Right. And he's 6'9". Let's agree to
6'9". Yes.
At 6'9". If you're 6'9" and you're not a good athlete, or you don't have any explosion, any explosiveness, I think that's an issue. I don't care how good your feel for the game is. And
yeah, look, I hear you. I hear you.
So they're not wrong, but I would also say Wizards Twitter, and by the way, you and I, me included, we've never watched the guy play.
Right.
We've seen some highlights.
Correct.
We've never seen him play because he's in France. And how many French pro league games? I'm talking about basketball now, not soccer.
Right.
You know, I guarantee we don't watch any of them.
No.
So,
no.
But sometimes the testing doesn't lie. And
well, the vertical is, I didn't realize the vertical was this bad. It's 25-inch standing vertical.
Yeah, that's
bad. That's bad.
It's a worry. It would be a worry. Yes, unless he's the greatest knockdown shooter on earth, and he isn't. Well, he could be good.
At the beginning of the process, he was being advertised as the best catch and shoot guy in the draft in terms of numbers, percentages, and what he was able to do during the 21-game stretch in France at the end of the fall, where he shot 46% from three during 21 contests. I don't know how many attempts that was per game, but that led me to believe that, okay, he's a good shooter. In terms of, like, the other on-court stuff with him, you continue to hear about the ability to knock down shots. But what I think would be most intriguing to the Wizards would be the position versatility and the ability to guard essentially 1 through 4. Because if you're 6'10", he's shown the ability to guard guards overseas. I don't know if he would have the strength necessarily at this level to guard true fours. But what, in your mind, would be his best trait and why Washington would be interested from what you're hearing?
Well, he's a 6'9 wing. That's pretty tall.
The positional size, yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty good. You know, that's one of the reasons why Denny is a valuable wing. He is said to have a good feel for the game, and that's something that you can't teach. It's very tough to teach that, and he's said to have it.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. I personally as I said before we brought you on, Josh, I am going to applaud any decision that they make, because for the first time in a long time, I trust the talent of value. Did Josh drop? I think we lost Josh, Chris. Well, effort to get Josh Robbins back. But for the first time in a long time, I genuinely trust the talent evaluators that the Wizards have in their front office, talking about Mike Winger, Travis Schlenk, Will Dawkins. I genuinely trust those guys. So the idea of anyone poo-pooing Josh on the pick would annoy me. As I was saying before we lost you, whatever way they go, I'm going to applaud the move, and I feel like we're completely at the mercy of the evaluator right now. Wizards fans out there, I feel like, should trust whatever decision they decide to make, whether it's staying at 2 and picking whoever, whether it's trading back, whatever. Because for the first time in a long time, we have competent talent evaluators in the front office, and I'm just excited to see what they could do with a full calendar year of work. Because as some fans may forget, Josh, when they drafted Bilal Coulibaly, they had not been on the job very long.
True, but they had been scouting him for years in their prior jobs. And what I was saying was, one of the reasons why no one knows what Washington wants to do is because this draft class, there are no sure things in this draft class. So a lot of it is the product of this being the worst draft class at the very top in years. At least that's what the majority of industry insiders think. And it's not an easy job. And the Wizards have to trust their abilities. You know,
yeah.
They have to get it right. And this is the draft where it's going to be tougher than most drafts to get it right.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's exciting as a fan to think about the prospect of them adding someone else who could be a part of the long-term solution here. But with that number 2 overall pick, in terms of the future of it, do you think, does your gut tell you that they stick and pick Wednesday? Or would you be surprised or taken aback if they feel that any trade calls for two?
Well, if they could they're not going to be able to do this, but if they could somehow get a very lightly protected pick for next year, then you'd have to consider that. Or 2026, they'd have to consider that. But I don't think that that's going to happen because those drafts are expected to be so strong. And again, there's not this can't-miss guy at two in this draft. What I think will happen is exactly what Sam Vecenie, my colleague, predicted today, both in the article he and I worked on together and in his mock draft. I think it winds up that the Wizards get Alex Saar at two. That's the way it seems like it's going. Right now, I think that's the most likely scenario.
So if they do go with Alex Saar at two, what would be the reason? Why is he so highly projected? And then what type of runway do you think he would have in terms of how quickly he can contribute to next year's group?
He's an athletic big who can move around the court very well and one day could be a very good defensive player. He needs to get much stronger. He needs to develop his skill. He's not a stretch five by any means. There are questions about his defensive rebounding. He's a long-term upside play. But that's the beauty of the Wizards' situation right now. They're not gunning to win right now.
Right.
They can give him minutes and speed his development along that way in kind of the lowest pressure environment that might exist in the league. So, again, they'd be betting on first of all, of course, his character, his athleticism, all of that. But they'd also be betting on their ability to develop him and their ability to give him extended minutes early in his career and let him play through mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sounds like an ideal situation if you're the prospect. In terms of readiness, would you consider him more or less pro-ready than Bilal was coming out last year?
That's a great question. Well, remember, he's playing pro
right
in
now.
Australia.
Right.
Bilal surprised everyone who hadn't been watching him play in France with his feel for the game.
Yeah.
So I would be surprised if Alex Saar exceeds that, because that was one of the most impressive things about Bilal. So I think he'd be hard pressed to match it right away. But he is said to be pretty good on that in that area.
Okay.
Just his court sense, but he also plays a different position from Bilal.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what ultimately happens with that number two overall pick. In terms of what they could potentially do at pick 26, I asked our pal Chase Hughes of Monumental Sports Network this last week when he joined me. At pick number 26, is it still the range of is it still the mentality of choosing the guy with the most upside, or do you think maybe at 26 – they go best player available? And there's one guy in particular that I think is a fascinating fit for Washington in terms of the ability to come in and help right away. And then how polarizing this young man is. Terrence Shannon Jr. from Illinois obviously was dealing with the illegal situation of sexual assault. And he was cleared of that. And it was found that the accuser was lying, and she was caught lying. From what you've been able to gather, not just with the Wizards, but I guess in NBA circles, where is he on team's board? And then what would you think about his fit in Washington with that second first-round pick?
I have to be straight with you, as always. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea what teams think of him, let alone the Wizards. What the Wizards are likely to do, I still think that they would try to get a high upside play there. As much as is possible late in the first round, in a draft where the talent level is thought to be pretty even from, oh, I don't know, maybe 13, 14 up through 25. So that's how I think they would play it. I think that they would be reluctant to draft anyone who has even the slightest hint of a character question. And I have to confess, I'm not very familiar with.
For sure.
I'm aware, certainly, of what the allegation was and that he's been cleared, but I'm not very knowledgeable in his situation.
For sure. Appreciate the honesty, as always. Any update on...
I'm ignorant, as usual.
Any thoughts on a potential Corey Kispert extension and whether or not they are hard at work at that right now?
Oh, I think that that's going to be a done deal, and it doesn't have to come anytime soon. It's basically right before the season starts. I think that if they were so far apart on an extension, they could have traded him before last year's trade deadline. So I would fully expect the Wizards and Kispert to reach an extension. And just as in the case of Avdija, it would be well-earned because he has shown some promise. And where are they going to – and he can shoot. And in this case, he can really shoot. So I think that's going to happen, but I don't expect that to be announced or even kind of leaked anytime soon. I think that's probably an October type of thing.
Josh, I know you got to run. I appreciate you giving us some time, as always, my friend. Continue to get geared up for the big week next week in the NBA draft.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me. It's always fun. Always fun.
Always love having you, Josh. That is Josh Robbins, who covers the Washington Wizards for The Athletic. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Joshua B. Robbins to get the latest on the Washington Wizards. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, more overtime here on 106.7 The Fan.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Welcome back. It's overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Linnell Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. We're getting ready to be joined right now on the BetQL guest hotline by our pal Josh Robbins, who covers the Washington Wizards and the NBA for The Athletic. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Joshua B. Robbins. Josh, what's going on, my man? How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Linnell.
Yeah, always fun having you on and talking hoops with you. You know how I get. I'm very passionate about our local basketball team, Josh. And you've covered this team for a little while now. I am so in the dark about what they are going to do with the number 2 overall pick, and I know what's been widely reported that they will choose between who Atlanta doesn't select, between Zachary Richey and Alex Saar. But in terms of what was reported by Jonathan Givony, I want to know if you can corroborate this. He described the Wizards draft talk and draft activity as radio silent coming out of the nation's capital, meaning that Will Dawkins, Travis Schlenk, Mike Winger not really tipping their hand to their peers in terms of what their interest level is in certain prospects. Would you agree with that? And from a fan's perspective, should we be worried that they are radio silent to this point?
I guess you just push one of my buttons, Linnell. Inadvertently.
Okay.
You know, everyone takes these mock drafts and all this intel so seriously, it's ridiculous. Until someone writes or says, hey, this team is going to draft so-and-so, it's all
baloney
irrelevant.
And cheese.
Well, that's an interesting way to describe it. Yeah. It's all bologna and cheese.
Yeah.
Bologna and cheese. I don't know any front office worth a darn that would telegraph what it wants to do, particularly if it's drafting second.
Right.
You know, or any team that's dependent on the team ahead of it, they're not going to, if they're the least bit competent, they're not going to say anything. And again, this is one other thing. What these aggregators, and you know who I'm referring to,
yeah.
these people who steal whatever they see in these mock drafts from someone like Jonathan Givony or Sam Vecenie at my place, so-and-so worked out in Washington. He worked out in Washington. Well, look, the Wizards have to get everybody they can possibly get into Washington for the draft. Not necessarily, yes, for this draft, that's true. But they have to do it for maybe years down the road when some of these people become available in possible trades.
Yes.
Or they become free agents. You get to know guys in a way that you can't get to know them after they join another team. So I guess you caught me at a bad time where I'm all grumpy.
But no, I'm upset about it as well. Because look,
it's nothing to get upset over. It's nothing to get upset over. But
well, leave the upsetness to me because I'm upset about it because. You know the narrative, and this is a big reason why I wanted to have you on tonight, because I know that you are a straight shooter and you are not afraid to call out bologna and cheese when bologna and cheese is the main course. There is this, and tell me if you've seen this or not. You know how I feel about Wizards Twitter. It is an absolute toxic cesspool of misinformation and armchair GMs that think they know more than they know. There is this consensus out there in Wizards Twitter, for what it's worth, that if it's Zachary Richichet, Josh, Wizards Twitter is going to be outside the Cap One Arena with pitchforks, blowtorches, ready to set the building ablaze. From what you've been able to gather during this pre-draft process, one, is there legit interest from Washington in Richichet? And then two, what type of prospect do you think he could end up being, and why is it, I guess, that he is widely viewed as a top two prospect in the draft?
I'm not sure that he is a top two prospect in the draft. I know that's what the mock drafts have said.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned Jonathan Givony at ESPN, who has consistently rated him as the number one pick, the erstwhile number one pick in Atlanta. Actually, I think this is one area where I'm beginning to tend to agree with Wizards Twitter.
Really? Okay.
Which he's 6'8 and a half.
This is my confusion. Is he 6'8 and a half or is he 6'10? Because that 6'10 is the number that's constantly thrown out by folks that are high on him for obvious reasons. Well, you want to make him seem taller.
I think 6'10 and 6'10 in sneakers.
Okay.
But he's got one of the worst vertical jumps in the league or in the draft. And this is not the NFL combine, but to some degree, to a large degree, athleticism does matter.
Yes.
Right. And, yes, six, nine. Let's agree to
six. Yes.
At 6'9". If you're 6'9" and you're not a good athlete, or you don't have any explosion, any explosiveness, I think that's an issue. I don't care how good your feel for the game is. And
yeah, look, I hear you. I hear you.
So they're not wrong, but I would also say Wizards Twitter, and by the way, you and I, me included, we've never watched the guy play.
Right.
We've seen some highlights.
Correct.
We've never seen him play. Because he's in France. And how many French pro league games? I'm talking about basketball now, not soccer.
Right.
I guarantee we don't watch any of them.
No.
So,
no.
But sometimes the testing doesn't lie. And
well, the vertical is, I didn't realize the vertical was this bad. It's 25-inch standing vertical.
Yeah, that's
bad. That's bad.
That's Yeah, it's a worry. It would be a worry, yes. Unless he's the greatest knockdown shooter on earth, and he isn't. Well, he could be good.
At the beginning of the process, he was being advertised as the best catch-and-shoot guy in the draft in terms of numbers, percentages, and what he was able to do during the 21-game stretch in France at the end of the fall, where he shot 46% from three during 21 contests. I don't know how many attempts that was per game, but that led me to believe that, okay, he's a good shooter. In terms of, like, the other on-court stuff with him, you continue to hear about the ability to knock down shots. But what I think would be most intriguing to the Wizards would be the position versatility and the ability to guard essentially 1-4. Because if you're 6'10", he's shown the ability to guard guards overseas. I don't know if he would have the strength necessarily at this level to guard true fours, but what, in your mind, would be his best trait and why Washington would be interested from what you're hearing?
Well, he's a 6'9 wing. That's pretty tall.
The positional size, yeah.
Yeah. So that's pretty good. You know, that's one of the reasons why Denny is a valuable wing. He is said to have a good feel for the game, and that's something that you can't teach. It's very tough to teach that, and he's said to have it.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. As I said before we brought you on, Josh, I am going to applaud any decision that they make, because for the first time in a long time, I trust the talent of value. Did Josh drop? I think we lost Josh, Chris. Well, effort to get Josh Robbins back. But for the first time in a long time, I genuinely trust the talent evaluators that the Wizards have in their front office, talking about Mike Winger, Travis Schlenk, Will Dawkins. I genuinely trust those guys. So the idea of anyone poo-pooing Josh on the pick would annoy me. As I was saying before we lost you, whatever way they go, I'm going to applaud the move, and I feel like we're completely at the mercy of the evaluator right now. Wizards fans out there, I feel like, should trust whatever decision they decide to make, whether it's staying at two and picking whoever, whether it's trading back, whatever. Because for the first time in a long time, we have competent talent evaluators in the front office, and I'm just excited to see what they could do with a full calendar year of work. Because as some fans may forget, Josh, when they drafted Bilal Coulibaly, they had not been on the job very long.
True, but they had been scouting him for years in their prior jobs. What I was saying was, one of the reasons why no one knows what Washington wants to do is because this draft class, there are no sure things in this draft class. So a lot of it is the product of this being the worst draft class at the very top in years. At least that's what the majority of industry insiders think. And it's not an easy job. And the Wizards have to trust their abilities. You know,
yeah.
They have to get it right. And this is the draft where it's going to be tougher than most drafts to get it right.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's exciting as a fan to think about the prospect of them adding someone else who could be a part of the long-term solution here, but with that number two overall pick, in terms of the future of it, do you think, does your gut tell you that they stick and pick Wednesday, or would you be surprised or taken aback if they feel that any trade calls for two?
Well, if they could they're not going to be able to do this, but if they could somehow get a very lightly protected pick for next year, then you'd have to consider that. Or 2026, they'd have to consider that. But I don't think that's going to happen, because those drafts are just expected to be so strong. And again, there's not this can't miss guy at two in this draft. What I think will happen is exactly what Sam Vecenie, my colleague, predicted today, both in the article he and I worked on together and in his mock draft. I think it winds up that the Wizards get Alex Saar at two. That's the way it seems like it's going. Right now, I think that's the most likely scenario.
So if they do go with Alex Saar at two, what would be the reason? Why is he so highly projected? And then what type of runway do you think he would have in terms of how quickly he can contribute to next year's group?
He's an athletic big who can move around the court very well and one day could be a very good defensive player. He needs to get much stronger. He needs to develop his skill. He's not a stretch five by any means. There are questions about his defensive rebounding. He's a long-term upside play. But that's the beauty of the Wizards' situation right now. They're not gunning to win right now.
Right.
They can give him minutes and speed his development along that way in kind of the lowest pressure environment that might exist in the league. So, again, they'd be betting on first of all, of course, his character, his athleticism, all of that. But they'd also be betting on their ability to develop him and their ability to give him extended minutes early in his career and let him play through mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that sounds like an ideal situation if you're the prospect. In terms of readiness, would you consider him more or less pro-ready than Bilal was coming out last year?
That's a great question. Well, remember, he's playing pro
right
in
now.
Australia.
Right.
Bilal surprised everyone who hadn't been watching him play in France with his feel for the game.
Yeah.
So I would be surprised if Alex Saar exceeds that, because that was one of the most impressive things about Bilal. So I think he'd be hard pressed to match it right away. But he's not. He is said to be pretty good on that in that area.
Okay.
Just his court sense, but he also plays a different position from Bilal.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see what ultimately happens with that number two overall pick in terms of what they could potentially do at pick 26. I asked our pal Chase Hughes of Monumental Sports Network this last week when he joined me at pick number 26. Is it still the range of is it still the mentality of choosing the guy with the most upside, or do you think maybe at 26 they go best player available? And there's one guy in particular that I think is a fascinating fit for Washington in terms of the ability to come in and help right away, and then how polarizing this young man is. Terrence Shannon Jr. from Illinois obviously was dealing with the legal situation of sexual assault, and he was cleared of that, and it was found that the accuser was lying, and she was caught lying. From what you've been able to gather, not just with the Wizards, but I guess in NBA circles, where is he on teams' board? And then what would you think about his fit in Washington with that second first-round pick?
I have to be straight with you, as always. I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea what teams think of him, let alone the Wizards. What the Wizards are likely to do, I still think that they would try to get a high upside play there. As much as is possible late in the first round, in a draft where the talent level is thought to be pretty even from, oh, I don't know, maybe 13, 14, up through 25. So that's how I think they would play it. I think that they would be reluctant to draft anyone who has even the slightest hint of a character question. And I have to confess, I'm not very familiar with.
For sure.
I'm aware, certainly, of what the allegation was and that he's been cleared, but I'm not very knowledgeable in his situation.
For sure. Appreciate the honesty, as always. Any update on?
I'm ignorant, as usual.
Any thoughts on a potential Corey Kispert extension and whether or not they are hard at work at that right now?
Oh, I think that's going to be a done deal, and it doesn't have to come anytime soon. It's basically right before the season starts. I think that if they were so far apart on an extension, they could have traded him before last year's trade deadline. So I would fully expect the Wizards and Kispert to reach an extension. And just as in the case of Avdija, it would be well-earned because he has shown some promise. And where are they going to – and he can shoot. And in this case, he can really shoot. So I think that's going to happen, but I don't expect that to be announced or even kind of leaked anytime soon. I think that's probably an October type of thing.
Josh, I know you got to run. I appreciate you giving us some time, as always, my friend. Continue to get geared up for the big week next week in the NBA draft.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me. It's always fun. Always fun.
Always love having you, Josh. That is Josh Robbins, who covers the Washington Wizards for The Athletic. Make sure you give him a follow on the old X app at Joshua B. Robbins to get the latest on the Washington Wizards. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, more overtime here on 106.7 The Fan.
Sometimes in football, you need just a little more for that first down. You need to be pushing the pile. And on our new podcast, we'll give you that extra effort.
I'm Mike Renner, a longtime NFL analyst who helped develop player evaluation systems that every NFL team uses to this day.
And I'm Kyle Long, former All-Pro offensive lineman in the NFL who knows a thing or two about getting people moving.
You'll get expertise from inside the trenches and behind the tape for 4 episodes every week. So make sure you download and subscribe to the Pushing the Pile podcast on the Odyssey app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.